from KMXT in Kodiak. This is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up this week, those angry charter boat captains gave Noah's Jane Lubchenco an earful in Homer. St. Paul's new boat harbor is ready for fishermen. And how many little fish does it take to make a big one? All that and more coming up on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
It's no secret that Homer charter captains are upset with NOAA's new halibut catch-sharing proposal, which would mean a one-fish-per-angler rule in the Gulf of Alaska under most circumstance. At a meeting Tuesday with Senator Mark Begich and NOAA Chief Dr. Jane Lubchenco, a large group of them let their feelings be heard. KBBI's Aaron Selbig was there.
A crowd of more than 200 people poured into the upstairs meeting room at Homer's Best Western Bidarka Inn Tuesday afternoon. Charter captains, commercial fishermen, Chamber of Commerce members, City Council members, and Mayor Jim Hornaday all were there to hear what the esteemed guests had to say about the complex new proposed halibut catch-sharing plan. Chamber Director Monty Davis, who helped coordinate the event, held a 2-inch-thick stack of index cards in his hand, each one of them with a handwritten question from the audience.
What impact do you think the implementation of a one fish per angler will have on this and surrounding communities? How will the new limited entry affect the catch-sharing plan? This plan is being promoted as a conservation plan. To me, a conservation means no one would be able to catch these fish. Isn't this really just a reallocation of those fish from sport to commercial? How long will Alaskans enjoy a fishery that allows them to provide for their families?
As Senator Mark Begich and NOAA Chief Dr. Jane Lubchenco looked on and took notes, Davis went through just about every question in the pile. Lubchenco took a shot at answering questions from the restless, standing room only crowd.
So thank you everybody for those questions. Clearly there are a lot of really challenging issues. I think that it's useful to focus on sort of the historical perspective here. We didn't get into this challenging situation overnight, and I think the thing that has triggered the decisions of the council and forwarding a rule to the secretary has really been the recognition that the size of the population has decreased significantly, and the acknowledgement that over time, the relative fraction of the catches that were being caught by different sectors has changed very, very dramatically.
Lubchenco cited the 1976 Magnuson-Stevens Act and NOAA's responsibility to end overfishing nationwide, but that was not the answer most of the Homer charter captains wanted to hear.
So if you look at the last few years,
the crowd soon grew a bit more restless. And then Senator Begich jumped in.
Let me, you know, fish wars are a pain in the ass. Okay? Let me just say that very bluntly. And it means there's winners and there's losers. Let me tell you, I sit in the Oceans Committee as chair and I listen to my Northeast colleagues. I wish them the best. You know, they should have took some lessons back in the day, and they didn't. And now they have like 3 fish left, and they're arguing over 20 people. You know, there's a reason why we have, and people, we're the envy of this country when it comes to fisheries on all levels. And now, yes, we have an issue right now. And we're going to have to deal with it as Alaskans have done year in and year out.
Lubchenco continued for a few more minutes answering questions as best as she could before turning things over to NIMS Fisheries Management Specialist Rachel Baker, who helped write the new rules. Baker ran through some of the basics of the new proposed plan, including a controversial provision that allows charter operators to buy back halibut from the commercial sector, and she outlined the years-long process that led to this point. Lubchenco reiterated that NOAA's primary goal is to ensure the long-term sustainability of the halibut fishery.
That's not something that economics can affect. That takes a priority, because we want a fishery to be able to bring economic benefit down the road.
Begich promised the Homer crowd that when and if the new halibut catch-sharing plan goes into effect, proper oversight would be conducted. In Homer, I'm Aaron Selbig.
while her colleague was in Homer, Alaska Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski was a guest on APRN's Talk of Alaska with Steve Heimel this week. He asked her reaction to losing Arnie Fugelvog, her fisheries advisor, who resigned after revealing he had pleaded guilty to federal fisheries violations.
Disappointment is a mild term and perhaps not the right word choice here, but I think so many of us feel that the trust that we had placed in Arnie has been violated. Extremely unfortunate. He is going to pay the consequences and quite dearly. But this is a situation that I think so many of us who knew him as a person, as a fisherman, and as a policy maker at the staff level are just extraordinarily, extraordinarily let down and disappointed by this.
She said filling the hole on her staff created by Fugelvog's resignation is something that must happen quickly.
Yeah, there is a huge hole. As you know, when we talk about issues that impact our state's economy, those areas that have real impact to Alaskan families, so much of it surrounds our fishing and our fisheries policies. So I am looking very actively to find that right fit, an individual that has the breadth and depth of experience that I need in the fisheries area. There have been many meetings already this month to talk with folks about their level of interest, but I am still soliciting names. So if anyone is interested, please, this is not an idle offer. Please let me know, because we need to get the spot filled. It's too important.
For his crimes, Fugelvog will spend 10 months in jail and pay a $150,000 fine.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
Ever since the commercial fur seal harvest in the Pribilofs was shut down, the residents of St. Paul have worked to turn their community into a successful fishing town. The completion of a major infrastructure project is a big part of making that happen. KUCB's Alexandra Gutierrez has more.
This month, the city of St. Paul was finally able to cut the ribbon on its new small boat harbor. The ceremony didn't come soon enough. The project has been in development for about 30 years, and many fishermen who live there say that the harbor is important for both keeping St. Paul's economy running and protecting the town's growing fleet. Jeff Kaufman manages fishing quotas for the Central Bering Sea Fishermen's Association, and he owns the 32-foot Bay Rose. He says that local boats used to have to tie up two or three in a row, and they face plenty of damage during storms.
We used to have to stay down there all through the night sometimes, watching our boats and putting new buoys in and making sure the lines were good. And there was a lot of risk that the whole dock could float away with all of our boats on it in the past. So this is really a major improvement, and it's really revitalized our small boat fishery.
About a quarter of St. Paul's 400-person population is involved with the halibut fishery, and it brought in nearly $4 million to the community last year. The new small boat harbor is expected to increase the fleet's efficiency and potentially even expand the fleet size. Kaufman adds that having space for more boats means that older fishermen can purchase bigger vessels, while younger ones can buy their own. Plus, for the residents of St. Paul, simply seeing the project finished is sort of a reward on its own. Work on this harbor began in the early 80s, shortly after the federal government pulled out of the Pribilofs and ended the commercial fur seal harvest. With the market for fur seal pelts gone, St. Paul was left without a source of income. The Army Corps of Engineers and the city government made plans to grow a fishing industry and build the infrastructure necessary to support that. The process was a slow-going one. All of the materials and parts needed to be prefabricated and shipped up to St. Paul. There were disagreements over land use. And worst of all, those building the new harbor had to deal with the weather and the waves. At one point, part of the harbor was swept away and had to be entirely rebuilt. Andrea Elcano was a project manager for the Army Corps of Engineers, and she says that it's arguably the toughest harbor project that she's ever worked on.
The waves just have so much distance to develop, and by the time they get to the Pribilofs, they're so powerful that it's really challenging to provide a safe harbor.
The $20 million small boat harbor was ultimately designed to withstand both these waves and 100-knot winds. Elkanen adds that because the conditions for building the harbor were so extreme, the Army Corps of Engineers was able to learn valuable lessons about wave action that they plan to use when building future harbors on the West Coast. Meanwhile, the fishermen of St. Paul are just relieved that their boats are safe from whatever Mother Nature throws at them. Reporting from St. Paul, I'm Alexander Gutierrez.
Every big fish in the sea got that way by eating lots of little fish. That's why some scientists, fisheries managers, and advocacy groups are paying more attention to the small prey in the sea. Northwest News Network correspondent Tom Bonsi reports.
Fisheries biologist Jen Zaman learned lots of things in grad school, but how to get a freshly captured seabird to barf in a bucket was not one of them.
Stubborn.
Some squirts of warm water down the gullet and squeezing the tummy does the trick.
Oh, yeah.
Zaman and her team from the NOAA Research Station in Warrenton, Oregon, want to know, what fish are the diving birds at the mouth of the Columbia River eating?
Yeah, it's definitely anchovy. I can see the dark intestine.
The day before, Zaman says the puke samples mostly contained half-digested surf smelt. Other examples of prey fish include sardines, herring, and mackerel.
So things like sardine and anchovy, which are extremely abundant, very important, not just for fishery, but for feeding other creatures in the food web, mammals, birds, larger fish. So it's very nice. So we know these birds are indicators of where these fish species of interest are.
This seabird dining survey is just one example of scientists paying greater attention to the fortunes of smaller fish. A sea change is even more noticeable among policymakers, managers, and some environmental groups. Earlier this year, the Pew Environment Group started a campaign to protect small schooling fish.
We knew it was the next logical step.
Paul Shively manages the campaign out of Portland. But when talk turns to limits on fishing for small schooling fish, then resistance crops up. Ocean advocates want West Coast fishery managers to cap quotas for bait fish at current levels and put a moratorium on any new fisheries. Commercial fisherman Ryan Kapp of Bellingham argues the West Coast sardine, anchovy, and herring fisheries are already quite conservatively managed.
Seeing that how none of these stocks are overfished or even approaching overfishing, I just assume to leave it alone. We've got enough regulations to keep track of as it is.
Environmentalists worry rising global demand for seafood and fish meal will put pressure on Pacific bait fish. At the Pew Environment Group, Paul Shively invokes the precautionary principle.
We don't need to wait till there's a crisis in our oceans to address an issue. And it's just for so many years we've looked at our oceans and we wait till there's a collapse of a fishery before we take action. And we're saying, you know, it doesn't hurt to have a new paradigm where perhaps we take some precautionary measures.
Shively has made that case to federal fishery advisors, including Bob Emmett, a marine biologist with the federal science agency NOAA. Emmett says it's premature to come down with a hard regulatory hand.
So there's still a lot of data needs that we need to, and to really put, if you're actively managing these fishes, that means you have a lot of information. And we don't believe at this time we really have it.
The fortunes of small fish are also surfacing at the state level. The California legislature is considering a law to promote ecosystem-based management in nearshore state waters. I'm Tom Bonsi near Warrenton, Oregon.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families, on the web at amsea.org, and by
the Pebble Partnership, pursuing jobs and opportunities for Southwest Alaska. Find out more at pebblepartnership.com.
And that's all for this edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help this week from KBBI's Aaron Selbig in Homer, APRN Steve Heimel in Anchorage, KUCB's Alexandra Gutierrez in Unalaska, and Northwest News Network's Tom Bonsi in Warrenton, Oregon. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.